And you're listening to Thursday Night's Arena. The Smashing Machine is a gripping new drama about MMA legend Mark Kerr, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It explores Kerr's rise in the brutal world of mixed martial arts, his battles with addiction and personal struggles, giving the viewer a raw, emotional take on a fighter's life. When it filmed it, premiered at Venice this year, it received a 15-minute ovation. The Smashing Machine has reignited our interest for combat sports movies here on Arena, a genre that captures human resilience and sacrifice, transcending the confines of the ring. From the likes of Rocky, where the underdog boxer becomes a cultural icon, to The Wrestler, where a fading star seeks meaning later in life. Jen Gannon joins me now to take me through some of the best and most impactful movies in the genre. Jen, just maybe fill us in on The Smashing Machine to begin with and what we know about it.
Yeah, so it's Benny Safdie, who we know from films like Uncut Gems, which was just an adrenaline ride and reignited, made people look at Adam Sandler again in a different way, post maybe Punch Drunk Love, Paul Thomas Anderson. So it was him back working with, let's say, auteur directors. And Benny and his brother Josh used to work together. Now they've split up, so it's brother against brother. So The Smashing Machine is his first go at this. And when you look at the trailer, you'd be forgiven for thinking, is this like every other kind of wrestling and boxing film we've seen before? It's a neat formula for audiences to follow. It's the hero story. You see someone like Mark Kerr, who played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, let's just say, in his first proper role outside of, you know, playing against a green screen. So this is him and his bid to be taken seriously, to see him in a different light. And it's his story. And you see him, you know, waiting in a doctor's room, worried about his health. You have his humble beginnings, his climb to the top, ably assisted by his patient, loving wife here, played by Emily Blunt. And that constant threat that's in the background of serious injury, and that's always humming there, right in the background. And that is a formula, I think, that works for film. It ignites something in an audience when you see the singular person battling against it. I mean, it's an easy metaphor, really, isn't it? I suppose. And if you want your audience to feel something, you give them a boxing or a wrestling film. Sports movies in general, they're a bit hit and miss. I don't think soccer, in quote unquote soccer, football, that doesn't translate to American audiences at all. It's hard to care about baseball, an extremely boring sport
in general,
unless it's A League of Their Own, which is probably the best baseball film. And the only thing that anyone ever remembers about Any Given Sunday is Al Pacino's speech. So it's very hard to care. I mean, we've had Formula One come out, which felt just like a big massive ad, really. And Luca Guadagnino's Challengers made a lot of people care about tennis because it had a thruple in it, but not very much about tennis at all, really. And I think there's something about the sports star, their life, the athlete, it's quite dull because they're quite regimented. But boxing and wrestling will always be exciting. It's about the lone man reckoning with his own mortality and coming close to immortality for a short amount of time. And it's also very cathartic, I suppose, to see someone get 7 bells knocked out of them in a very cinematic way.
Yeah. In general, is there an arc for these films? And I know it kind of varies from film to film and who you're dealing with and the type of career that they have. But is there a general arc that most of them have?
I mean, if you're looking at something like Rocky, it is the underdog story. It's about, and funnily enough, when Rocky was shopped around initially, it was a story about an actor. A failed actor who then tries to get his career back on track. And every studio was like, nobody wants to see that. But when you turn it into this one man who is fighting for the American dream, like living his American dream, a blue collar guy, and Sylvester Stallone, such an odd character when you think about it. And when you look at Rocky now, he actually is very naturalistic on screen. And I think there's something that keys into that state of mind where it's about achievement and about discipline. Something very American about that mindset. I think when Rocky landed, it kind of touched on a bit of what we've seen with Reaganism, about the individual succeeding, about work ethic. You see him getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. You see the montage. It invented that montage that we've seen parodies of so many times, where he has to get up and do his regime. It's about how much can you give, and you're given and given until you have nothing left. And that is very capitalistic, one would say. It's the capitalist mindset about making a dog of yourself. And it also, I feel, is the easiest way to put a window on the working class male without making it too socio-political. It's a window. Boxing is usually a window on the soul of the working class man, and it's done in a very adaptable way.
Okay, let's take a clip from Rocky. People will probably be familiar with this. Rocky and his girlfriend, Adrian Sylvester Stallone and Talia Shire, on a date at the ice rink, and Rocky is teaching her a little boxing.
Aren't you skating?
Nah, I ain't skating since I was 15. You know, that's when I started fighting, when I was 15. Skating's kind of bad for the ankles, you know?
Yeah.
You're a pretty good skater, aren't you? You know, like I was saying before on the way over here, you know, fight used to be tossing me, but no more, you know? See, all I wanted to do out of fight was prove I was no bum, that I had the stuff to make a good pro, you know?
You never got the chance?
Oh, hey, you know, I ain't crying about it, because I still fight. I kind of do it like a hobby. See, I tell you what the trouble is. You see, I'm a southpaw.
What's a southpaw?
Oh, southpaw means you're left-handed, and southpaw throws your timing off, you see? Other guys, it throws the timing off, makes them look awkward. Nobody wants to look awkward. You know where southpaw came from?
Nine minutes!
I'll tell you, a long time ago, there was this guy, maybe a couple hundred years ago, he was fighting in the, he was fighting around, I think it was around Philadelphia, and his arm, he was left-handed, his arm was facing towards New Jersey, you see? And that's south. So naturally they call him Southpaw. You see? Southpaw, South Jersey, South Camden, Southpaw. You know what I mean? I don't know. Things probably worked out for the best, don't you think?
Never got a chance, though, because you're left-handed, huh?
Well, that's absolutely true, you know?
I think a very brief honourable mention here as well for Ryan Coogler's Creed, because it was a film with an idea that never should have worked and seemed like a terrible, terrible car crash to begin with for anybody who liked the Rocky films, and it's just great.
And also it's like Rocky is becoming the man he thinks his father would have loved. It's about father-son relationship, was also very masculine, tapping into masculine emotions that don't really get shown in a lot of other films. And I think that's something about the boxing film. It is the male weepy. They're full to the brim with melodrama, and that's why there's such a big audience pull. Most men, they might not want to settle down and watch Marriage Story or Manchester by the Sea, but they'll want to see the tragedy, the desperation of something like Million Dollar Baby or The Iron Claw. They're a good way to help release pesky emotions, and usually you're seeing the hardscrabble lives of these individuals, the emotional pain that's funneled into the violence and that physical effort that the characters go through.
I will take that stereotype and begrudgingly accept it.
Most men.
A lot of the time actors use roles in films like this to change how audiences see them, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about physicality. So I suppose with women, it doesn't matter. You're always supposed to be seen as perfection, no matter what kind of role you're playing. But boxing and wrestling movies are shorthand for when an actor wants to change that perception of them. So you have the indie boy, pretty star, Jake Gyllenhaal. He becomes this raw, ultra-masculine figure in Southpaw. Daniel Day-Lewis gets to explore his physicality rather than his cerebral side in something like The Boxer. Then you have the wrestling boys of the recent Sean Durkin film, The Iron Claw. And with The Iron Claw, it was like the new legion of young stars. So Jeremy Allen White from The Bear, Harris Dickinson, they were bulking up and hulking out for their roles. But I think it was the kind of almost forgettable heartthrob, Zac Efron. He really deserved the plaudits as the oldest and the troubled and cursed Von Erich wrestling brothers. And he became this literal he-man and managed to also tackle the emotional intensity of the material. And sadly, that was circumnavigated by the Oscars, because usually with the Oscars, they love awarding boxing films for the actors because they want to see that physical transformation that they go through, and they want to reward that in some way, in ways that they don't reward the physicality of a lot of comedy films, which a lot of people put themselves through, comedy actors. They don't tend to see that. They want to see the full-on vision come through. Which you have to mention Raging Bull. I know you're going to say it.
No, I'm not. Well, okay, let's mention Raging Bull. Again, it deserves, I think, a brief moment, because anytime you ever discuss movies like this, it is considered to be the apex.
It is the apex. I mean, this film is nearly 45 years old, and I can't even believe that, because it still is so fresh and vital today. And I think Martin Scorsese, as an indoor kid, just like me, he wasn't attracted to sports, boxing, anything. And neither was Thelma Schoonmaker, who's the uber editor, who's absolutely, her editing in this film is just unbelievable. And I think Scorsese thought there was nothing to boxing because he thought the shots were boring. They trained the same shots. And then when you see that shot in Raging Bull of De Niro as Jake LaMotta up against it, you understand what he could bring, his eye could bring to boxing and make it different. And also, obviously, De Niro was the champion of transformation. He started that ball rolling about, you know, putting on weight to become the later LaMotta, but also putting himself through the absolute ringer to be fighting fit in the early days.
I want to talk a little bit the Oscar bait just before we finish as well. So I'm going to play a clip from Million Dollar Baby. This is boxing trainer Frankie Clint Eastwood meeting amateur boxer Maggie Hillary Swank and offering her some advice.
I'm gonna need that speed bag back.
This bag?
Yes, that bag. That's my bag. And if you're hitting it, people will think I'm training you.
Was that such a bad thing, boss?
Yes, yes, it is. Every time you touch it, you're losing me business out here.
I gotta agree, I am embarrassing myself.
Well, I can't just lend it to anybody, you know.
I understand.
Look, you seem like a nice girl. Can I give you some advice?
I'd appreciate that.
You're going to find a trainer either in this gym or somewhere else that's going to want to train a girl. It's the latest freak show out there. But the only trouble is they're going to be wasting your time because you're too old.
I don't feel that old.
Well, neither do I. But you don't see me fighting 21-year-olds, do you?
Although you feel like he possibly might have wanted to at that stage of his career. I want to bring it back to the Smashing Machine. So Benny Safdie is going, if you'll pardon the pun, a few rounds with Josh, his brother, in the awards ceremonies this year, because not only did they both have new films out, they're both in the same genre.
Yeah, they're both two very different sporting movies, I have to say. So you have Josh with Marty Supreme, which is starring Timothée Chalamet as this nebbish looking but strangely overconfident, almost like a Philip Roth protagonist. He's this table tennis star, Marty Mauser. And then you have The Rock going three-dimensional in what looks to be this very traditional Oscar turn in The Smashing Machine. Now, I know where my heart lies, but the Academy loves a full-blooded dust-up, and this may be The Rock season, the moment. And whether, you know, his performance will be a knockout, that's for us audience members to decide. But I think that's the one to watch. That will be the fight, the duke out to watch is between the brothers.
I think if anybody can make table tennis sexy, surely it's Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, 100%. And Josh Safdie. I believe in both of them.
Do you have a favourite out of all of the ones that you've been thinking about and talking about?
Raging Bull has to be the one. I just think if anybody is going to make you interested in a sport that they don't even care about, it's Martin Scorsese. And what he does is it's about the whirl around the individual. And as well, it's about how much pressure he puts upon the individual. As in, this guy isn't a great guy. Let's not look up to him. Sports heroes, they're just like any other heroes. They have to be interrogated. And I think some of the other films we talk about don't interrogate their star enough. But as always, Marty rises to the challenge every time.
Jen Gannon, thank you so much for talking to me on Arena tonight for that. A journey through the cinematic world of combat sports films. The Smashing Machine, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, opens in cinemas on October 3rd. That is it for tonight's Arena. Paul Murnock was on sound. Leah Murphy researched. Our BCO tonight was Mary Elizabeth Bruton. And tonight's show was produced by Reg Luby. Please do not forget to join us tomorrow night from the slightly earlier time of 6:30 here on RTE Radio 1, when we'll bring you our Arena Culture Night Spectacular live from Studio One. That's 6:30 to 8 tomorrow night here on Radio One. I'm Rick O'Shea. I will talk to you then. Next up, it is John Creedon after the news.